I wonder, do you ever get asked for feedback on anything? Some people laugh at you. So, you know, someone's done something for you, and in return you're asked to provide some feedback on their performance. And often it's done in the form of some very simple questions, you know, was it you know, good, was it average, was it unsatisfactory, and you have to fill in a box. You know, it happens all the time these days. We have it with our IT help desk at work. So, you know, the other week I had a very small problem with my computer. So I phoned up this help desk. Must have fixed it in about 20 seconds. It was really simple. But, you know, no sooner has it been fixed. So I get emailed a little, you know, feedback thing. And it actually took me longer to do the feedback than it did solve the problem. You know, actually, my favourite one of all is I travel through the airport in Cork in Ireland a lot, and you know, any of you who go through airports a lot know that, you know, one of the most sort of stressful parts of an airport is going through the security. So they've got a little feedback thing in their security. There's three little buttons as you exit security. There's a big green one with a smiley face. There's a sort of orange one with a flat face, and a red one with a sad face. And, you know, as you go through there, you hit the button to say, you know, how you felt their service was. And I think every time I've been through there, bar one, I've been happy. I've hit the green face. The only time I was slightly not happy was when they decided my toothpaste tube was slightly too big. It was 125 mils, and it can only be 100. I said, but it's empty. That doesn't count, sir, and they confiscated it. So that time I was a bit upset, so they only gave them the flat face that day. But one of the worst things, of course, is when you know, people give feedback on you. Now, for all I know, there's a local preacher this morning hiding away, you know, giving me feedback maybe. But, you know, you get these categories, you know, ranging from unsatisfactory to poor to sort of satisfactory. Then you can be good or you can be outstanding. Something I've never seen in one of these feedback forms is perfect as an option, you know. And that's probably a good reason for that, because, you know, we know that, you know, achieving perfection, you know, it's very difficult. You know, Jesus is the only man we know that has lived a life that was truly perfect. Yet he said, and we just heard it read in the last verse of that Matthew chapter 5, it says there, be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. So we have there a challenge to try and strive to achieve perfection. You know, we may not achieve perfection, but I think if we strive for perfection, at least we might get as far as outstanding. And so what I want to think about this morning is some of the teaching that Jesus gave in that passage. And it's really, you know, I've summarized it as a blueprint for love. Now, how is that passage helping us to think about how we relate to other people? You know, how we show love for other people. And in doing that, you know, we become outstanding people. So what is Jesus' blueprint for love? Now, one of the challenges I found when reading this passage is this verse. But I tell you, Jesus said, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Now, I guess I struggled a bit with that, because, you know, I've read that verse, you know, hundreds of times probably. I've quoted it many times, but, you know, I don't think that, I hope I haven't got any enemies, you know, unless someone knows something I don't know. But, you know, I kind of struggle with it. So, you know, how can I love my enemies when I don't really think I'm fairly nice chap. I don't think I've got any enemies, and, you know, I don't think I'm anyone's enemy particularly. So, you know, how is it we understand, you know, these verses? When, you know, some of you may be thinking like that as well. Now, you know, sometimes, you know, you see things on the television for a purpose. And about 10 days ago, I was working at home, and I think I turned the news on at lunchtime, and there was a story I heard on the lunchtime news bulletin that kind of struck a chord with me at the time. You know, I thought, you know, that's a really, really moving story I heard. I had no idea at the time that today that I would be preaching on the subject of, you know, loving your enemies. But I'm going to share just a bit about this story I heard on the news, because I think it really does help to understand what it truly means to, to that, put that verse into practice and love your enemies. So can we have the next slide? I don't know if anyone recognises this man. As you can see, he's a priest in a church in Africa. If you click once more, this is Father, I don't know, Xavier Fagba. He's a Catholic priest in a church in this country. If you bring up the map and then click a couple of times, once more. There, right in the middle of Africa, is this country called the Central African Republic. It's not one of those countries we probably hear an awful lot about. If you click a couple more times, we can bring it up. There it is, the Central African Republic. But this is one of those places in the world where there's actually quite a terrible civil war going on at the moment. But it's not one we hear about too often. I quite often, in prayers for intercession, pray for places in the world, in need of peace. And, we naturally think of the places like Syria and Afghanistan and, at the moment, the Ukraine. But sometimes, and I often have a sort of throwaway line at the end of those prayers and the other places that we don't hear about. And, this is one of these other places we don't often hear about. But there is a war taking place there. Nominally, it's between Christian factions and Muslim factions within this country. But some quite terrible stories I've read, of ethnic cleansing taking place, people being slaughtered with machetes, terrible stories you're hearing. I don't know too much about the background. Didn't have time to sort of read too much, but it's clearly there's a terrible conflict taking place in this country. What Father Xavier, should we say, Javier sounds more Spanish, but because is what he's done as a Catholic priest there, in amongst this conflict where normally Christians and Muslims are fighting, he has opened up his church, and about 650 Muslims have actually taken asylum. He's offered them chance to go and have sanctuary within his church. They're fleeing persecution by Christian forces, and he has opened up his church, he's opened the doors and let them come in. And if we go to some of the things that he has said and have been said about him, he looked at the situation, he said, "I had to act. Any human being would have done the same. My faith demands it." He said, "When I took in Muslim refugees, I got everything: humiliation, insults, attacks. There were bullet holes in his church as a result of this. But he's taken this step, and he actually believes that some of the people he's taken in may well have been responsible for attacks on Christian families. But he sees this as a step that may actually lead to people changing the way that they live their lives." One of the things much earlier in Matthew chapter 5 is, of course, Jesus saying, "Blessed are the peacemakers." And we think of peacemakers sometimes as, heads of governments, diplomats, people working for the United Nations. And, I had a quick look at the list of people that have, won the Nobel Peace Prize. And, you see a lot, Barack Obama, leaders of the United Nations. Actually, 2 years ago, the entire European Union was given the Nobel Peace Prize, so we all kind of share that. But in amongst that, there were other, lesser well-known people, people that have actually taken steps to peace, on the ground where they are. But I looked upon this situation and saw a man that, was really living out that statement, "Blessed are the peacemakers." Someone is looking at what's going on and said, "Enough is enough." And if people on the ground in these situations can actually change, then, that is always a true path to peace. That expression we heard, an eye for an eye. rather than seeking retribution and revenge, they're choosing, you know, another path to take. And the Archbishop of the Catholic Church in this country has said, this is true biblical virtue in action. And he's urging his church to be the heart that beats in the rhythm of love. I thought it was a wonderful expression, a heart that beats in the rhythm of love. You know, not distinguishing ethnicity or religion, just seeing people as they are. So, you know, Xavier is really putting that command, that teaching of Jesus, love our enemies, into practice. And it's so much more than just praying for people. It's practical. It's offering love in the midst of a situation where there's tremendous personal risk. You know, we read this expression, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, and many people have seen that as a mandate for revenge and to, you know, if someone attacks you, you attack them back. It is misunderstood. Really, this teaching should be taken to mean that, you know, when someone has, you know, hurt someone in some way, the compensation, you know, should be commensurate with the crime that's being committed. So it's actually saying, you know, in these situations, there should be justice, but not revenge. And Jesus said, turn the other cheek. What does that mean practically? It meant, you know, literally in Africa, you know, Xavier and his church were offering, you know, the hand of peace. In fact, he preached to his own church one of the Sundays and said, you know, what I want you to do is to go out into the community and offer this hand of peace, shake the hands of the Muslims, to build, you know, break down those barriers and build trust. He's turned the other cheek by offering the open door of his church to these people, not slamming the door in their face. This is true love in action. We go to the next slide. So, you know, in many ways we read the Sermon on the Mount and, you know, it's Jesus' blueprint for how we live our lives. But I think this particular passage, as I say, I think it's a blueprint for love. How do we put true love into action? And I just want to, you know, illustrate this with three points. Cheryl has alluded to these already. If we go to the first one is to be able to love without barriers. Being able to love people despite obvious differences between us. This is a love that isn't prejudiced by our perception of other people. It's not prejudiced by, you know, what history has gone on before. This is being able to love someone despite being wronged by them. You know, this statement that Jesus uses, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. You know, I was looking into this. This isn't actually a verse from the Old Testament, but this was certainly a philosophy that the Jewish people had adopted, you know, based on certain other scriptures. But you think about that. Love your neighbor and hate your enemy. If that's your philosophy for life, what does it lead to? It means that, you know, we naturally will divide up into groups of like-minded people. People that share our values. They're just the same as us. But what happens when you do that? One of the words that describes it is sectarianism. We divide into these sects of people. And if we end up hating everyone who's not like us, then, you know, that can be the catalyst for conflict. And we've seen it so many times in history. And we end up building walls around us, so we you know, keep ourselves together and contained. But these walls separate us from other groups. And these walls become bigger and bigger. And they can become, as we've seen in many situations, unmovable barriers, which become harder and harder to break down. But look at Jesus. You know, Jesus saw people as they were. He didn't see them with barriers around them that meant he couldn't talk to them, he couldn't minister to them, he couldn't be with them. Didn't matter who they were, he saw no barriers. And I think, you know, that's the great thing about the YouTube video. It's being able to see people as they are. You know, we are naturally, you know, wary of strangers, and you know, we have little barriers that we have between people we don't know. And you know, that video, I think, is, you know, helping us to see people as they are. You know, we're all God's children. There should be no barriers between us, but we build them. I mean, consider, you know, lepers. You know, there was a good reason why, you know, lepers had to be kept separate from a sort of health point of view, but it didn't have to stigmatize people, so, you know, there was never any contact, couldn't speak to them. Jesus broke those barriers down. Now, we don't have, you know, lepers in our country now. But remember a few years ago when we first heard about HIV and people with AIDS? What happened when, you know, to people that they were stigmatized, just like people that were lepers 2,000 years ago? You know, some people see that puts a barrier around someone. You can't talk to them, you can't touch them, you can't be near them. And that's how we are sometimes with people. Jesus is saying we need to get alongside people and love them as they are. You know, one of the things that is trialed is what's called restorative justice. This is when, you know, someone who's committed a crime, you know, is asked to meet the person they've you know, committed the crime against, so they can talk to them. And that can be really difficult for both parties. But if it's done in a way where, you know, you're not shouting at the other person, not blaming them, just listening to each other. Again, that can break down barriers. That's a way of turning the other cheek. It doesn't mean we ignore justice. You know, God still demands justice. We know that. That's the message of the cross, is that God demanded justice for our sins. But we need to learn to love without prejudice, without judging other people based on who we think they are, because there should be no barriers. It's hard to do when people have hurt you, but, you know, Xavier has shown it's not impossible. So that's love without barriers. And the second one is what I call love that takes risks. Now, I wonder, you know, how often have you had a situation where you could have done something really sort of positive, shown love for someone in a really positive way, but you didn't. And then you look back and regret it and think, you know, why didn't I do that? So often we hold back, because actually to love other people sometimes means taking risks. We become vulnerable, you know, letting, you know, 650 Muslims into your church, when you know some of them may well have committed, you know, crimes against your people, is taking a huge risk to safety. But it didn't stop him. You know, loving in Jesus' way means risk. You know, just look at Jesus' life. It was full of taking risks. He bared his all to love other people. He went to those places no one else would go, like speaking to lepers, you know, in the house of a tax collector or a Pharisee, meeting a Samaritan woman. All of these things were taking risks because other people would not have done these things. And it led him into conflict. And he was eventually made so vulnerable that he was put to death on a cross. But even then, he didn't forget the love for other people. What was it? You know, he prayed for the people that were, you know, nailing him to the cross, because he said, you know, they don't know what they're doing. Taking risks to love others. I find this quite interesting, because actually at work, I seem to spend half my time trying to avoid risks, minimize risks, because, you know, when you're manufacturing chemicals, you want to do it as safely as possible. So you want to do everything possible to reduce the risk. But, you know, in other areas, there are situations where, You know, sometimes we just have to take risks. You know, imagine a football team. You know, 5 minutes to go in the match, they're 1-0 down. In that situation, you quite often see things like the goalkeeper, you know, coming up from his goal right down to the other end of the pitch to join in the attack. That's taking a huge risk, because if the other team get wind of that, they quickly get the ball. And we've seen it, they just boot the ball down the other end. And, you know, there have been occasions where they goes, you know, it goes into the goal because the goalkeeper's down the other end of the pitch. But in those situations, if you're that team, there's no point in playing it safe. You're going to lose unless you do something. So they take a risk. They become vulnerable. There's no point in playing it safe. You know, that's a, you know, I think that applies to us as well, because we live in a world full of people who do not know the Lord Jesus Christ. And we are called to be missionaries. It may be that something that we do, something we say, is the hope for someone else. And sometimes to offer them that hope, we have to take risks. So I say, should we be playing it safe? The love we're called to follow is a love that takes risks. And then just finally, what I call outstanding love. Now, last week I was preaching another church on the law, about the teacher of the law that came to Jesus, and he said, you know, what are the most important commandments? And what we see is Jesus picked out two commandments. One is love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your strength, and your mind. And the other one was love your neighbor as yourself. So Jesus is saying, if you look at the whole of the law, the most important thing is to love. And the love that he's calling us to have is what I call outstanding love, or love that stands out, love that is noticed through word, through action. This is the love where if we strive for perfection, you know, we can achieve outstanding. And when I read, you know, all of Matthew's teaching in the Sermon on the Mount, one of the things that stands out is that, you know, Jesus starts from a sort of minimum standard. He said, you've heard that it was said, and he describes, you know, something that we're commanded to do. But he always sees that as the minimum standard and takes us on to something greater, so it takes us further. He sets a new standard for how we behave, how we love other people, how we interact with people. And he's saying we shouldn't just conform to expected behavior. We need to be different. We need to take things further. We need to stand out because of our love. Because it seems that there are kind of acceptable ways to behave in society today, and it's very easy just to conform to the way that everyone else behaves. But no, Jesus is quite clear. It's not enough just to love your neighbour. And he mentions pagans, tax collectors, people that would have been seen as the sort of the lowest in society. Even they do that. You've got to do something so much more, something that stands out, that marks you out as being different. And, you know, sometimes, as I say, we find it hard to, you know, understand this in terms of loving enemies. And what Jesus is really saying is, it's not, you know, what he means is he's redefining who our neighbours are, that our neighbours are not just the people like us, but we break down the barriers and everyone is our neighbour. You know, even our enemies, even the people that we don't get on with, we love them all the same. But maybe something to think about if you're struggling with this concept of loving enemies is thinking about what are the emotions that sometimes lead us to, you know, to build relationships with people that, you know, develop badly and people can become enemies. Often something like anger at the start of a relationship can actually ruin it and cause it to go down a completely different path. So maybe think about the things, what are the things that make you angry? Do you really need to be angry in those situations? You know, for me, and I'm sure for a lot of you, it's poor customer service and people on in call centres that get the butt of a lot of people's anger. And usually quite unfairly, because they're not the people who have actually done you any wrong, but it's very easy to shout at someone down a phone, isn't it? And that's really so unnecessary, because it's not their fault. But it seems it's the accepted thing to do. You've had a bad service, so you shout down the phone at someone. There's another way you can act differently. You know, turning the other cheek is not shouting down the phone in anger. Because, you know, if anger develops, that's the thing that can build and build and build, and it can lead to conflict. You know, it's so easy just to be like everyone else, to conform. You know, young people find this so difficult. You know, there's a certain accepted, you know, way that, you know, young men and women behave on a Friday night. You know, go out drinking, bad language, you know. And what does it lead to? It leads to fights and vandalism and people being ill and all these things. There's another way. We don't have to conform, but let our love stand out. Make us different. This is his blueprint for love. There's doing just enough, and there's loving in Jesus' way, which is always to go further. So can we follow that? Now, Xavier has shown us this is possible in the midst of terrible situations, breaking down barriers of culture and religion, and at the same time taking huge personal risks and risks for his church. But what is the result of that? The result is it's outstanding. His story has been told. The world has taken notice. It's been in news bulletins, newspapers, on the internet, because his love and his actions have truly stood out and made a difference. Can we follow that example?